Ever Bristol City podcast. We were hoping for a first home win of the season at Ashton Gate on Saturday, but it finished 0-0. I would say probably one of the best 0-0 draws I've seen, if you can have such a thing. Joining me is Ian. Neil may be joining us later. Mark's away. Ian's in sunny Madeira, and I'm back from a week in the sunny south of Spain. And while I'm on the air, thanks to Gary and Anne-Marie for a couple of good nights out in the Costa del Sol. Ian, as we normally do, just give me a quick 30 seconds what your immediate thoughts were as you walked away from the ground after the game.
Well, it was a classic game of two halves, wasn't it? We were the better team in the first half and we should have got something out of it. But once again, we've got a major issue scoring goals at home. That's four home games now against Championship opposition. We've drawn two, lost two, and only scored one goal in four games. And that has to be a concern and why I would tweak the formation slightly and play two strikers up front. That being said, we should have gone in front at half-time because we didn't. We lost control of the game in the second half, and by the end of the game, I was more than happy to get a point.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I mean, I think on the first half, I would say that was probably amongst, bar the goal, lack of, I would say that was probably one of the best 45 minutes of attacking play at home that I've seen under Pearson's tenure. But we didn't get the goal. And as you said, Ian, in the second half, they came on very strong. And I was happy to settle for a point. And going into these two home games in the space of 4 days, you know, I sort of set the stall of 4 points. That was a win and a draw. Well, to maintain that, we got to get a win on Tuesday night. But we're averaging a point and a half a game, but home form is concerning. Ian, the starting lineup, it sort of picks itself, doesn't it? Yes, at the moment. I mean, Dickie was available, but any surprises there? And obviously on the bench, there was one. I thought it was a coming out of retirement for Sammy Nelson, but it's Requam. But what are your thoughts on the starting lineup when that announced?
Well, as you said, with TGH loan tied, I'll call it, can't play against his parent club. George Tanner was always going to come back. I thought George did well defensively because the lad he was marking has got a few miles in his legs, but he's a very good player. I mean, I think most City fans would have picked that team yesterday from what we had available. Like I say, I'd make a couple of tweaks against Plymouth, who, by the way, although they lost yesterday, if you look at the stats from that game, they absolutely battered Preston. So they look a dangerous side. So we shouldn't think, oh, well, they lost away from home again and they're below us in the table and take anything for granted. They had, I think, 14 shots, 7 on target, 14 corners, 67% possession. So they should have got something out of that game at Preston yesterday, but Preston are having that kind of start to the season where they're winning by the odd goal instead of losing by the odd goal. Yeah. I think most City fans who take any notice of that kind of thing could have probably predicted that team yesterday.
Yeah. Looking at the start of the action, I say, you know, Albion brought 2,500 fans down. Again, well, moving away from the action, just talking about that one thing there, surrendering the whole of the Atio to an away support. It's a bone of contention on the fans forum. But, you know, do you have a view on that? Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing? Should they be positioned elsewhere? People say, oh, you can't because of the open concourses. But I'm just thinking that corner of the Dolmen, you can partition off a bloody big concourse, in my view. But I just think it gives them, you know, it's like a home game for them when they start going, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, there's two things I'd say. Number one is we've got a right to talk about that when we can sell all the tickets for the game. We haven't. The second thing is I would put them, the away fans, as Newcastle do, up where Eagles dare, up at the top of the Lansdowne. It's like anything else in construction, Dave, where there's a will, there's a way. Mm. So you could put them up there. We know that we give less tickets to certain clubs. Swans is one, Cardiff's another, because of damage they've done. But if we wanted to do that, I'm sure we're quite capable of doing it. Now, the powers that be really don't want to do it because it's a bit of an inconvenience and in another way, they want our fans to have the best facilities. And the best facilities aren't in the Atio. And that's the next part of the ground earmarked for development if we ever reach the promised land. So I can see it always round. I would prefer to have two home ends, as, for example, Aston Villa do, as was noted by our erstwhile manager, Lee Johnson, who didn't have a very auspicious start to his Fleetwood career yesterday. I'm of the school that says put them at the top of the Lansdowne, the far right-hand end, as you look at it from the Dolmen. There are some logistical problems with that, but nothing that can't be overcome.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, no, we could talk about that. And as you say, it's the powers that be of which we have no influence, being the wholly independent Bristol City podcast. So into the action. I mean, it was a sparkling start. I took somebody who hadn't been to a game since, well, I don't know, March or something like that. And yeah, even he was commenting on. And, you know, I thought Sykes shaped up well early on. Just before he hit the post, Bell was in there with the side netting. But, it was a sparkling opening 20 or so minutes, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes, I was very pleased. I mean, what we did do is we won the second balls, the first balls, and although we played ourselves in trouble a couple of times in the first half, I mean, I'll give you a classic example. There was a lot of City fans extolling the virtues of Zach Viner with that fantastic recovery tackle, and fantastic recovery tackle it was. Having said that, it was his fault the guy got away in the first place because he got caught on the wrong side. And Thomas Asante did that to him a couple of times. So you have to look at overall where that danger comes from. But we're lucky that we've got Zach, who had decent recovery speed. Cal Naismith made a very good tackle late on. There seemed to be some debate whether he got the man then and the ball or one or the other. But the referee didn't see it that way, and he was in probably best place to see it. And the linesman didn't give anything. So that's just the way it goes, and that'll happen to us plenty of times this season. But, yeah, I was quite pleased. The only thing I wasn't pleased with, we didn't stick the ball in the net.
That is an ongoing
problem.
I think the thing, when you say sticking the ball in the net, I don't know who's calling this number at that time on a Sunday. When you say sticking the ball in the net, when Sykes' shot hit the post and Bell's went sort of wide, I think he had one that curled wide as well. I mean, there were shots. We had 14 shots yesterday, none on target, which tells its own story. But, you know, you'd expect, certainly with the Sykes one, because it came back and bounced across the edge of the six-yard area, you'd expect Naki to be there. And he's only got one goal from open play in 26 games. That has to be a worrying, doesn't it?
Oh, it's a real concern.
Even though he had a good game yesterday, you know, he looks full of athleticism or something. And you say we need to play with two strikers. I mean, arguably, in some people's minds, Sykes, Wells and Bell, you know, that's playing with three strikers in my book. Because, well, OK, Sykes can play that right-back role on occasion. But, you know, what, you know, you say we play with a two, but, you know, you look at the way it's lined up on BBC, it's a front three. So... why?
Yeah, but the way it's lined up on BBC, what we actually play is a 4-5-1 defending and a 4-3-3 when we're attacking. That's how it works. But Sykes and Bell are both wide players. We've seen Sam Bell down the middle on his own, can't do it. Now, perhaps if you put Sam closer to Naki, I'd make a couple of tweaks for the Argyle game. I'd bring Taylor.
Let's talk about that in a minute, Ian, when we preview the...
Well, if you're talking about strikers...
Yeah.
Naki can't buy a goal at the moment. I mean, he had one shot in the first half that the keeper could have threw his cap on.
That's right.
Their keeper had one difficult save to make in 90 minutes, and that was from Harry Cornick. I think Cornick should have done better. I think he should have lifted the shot slightly, but, you know, he controlled it well, and it was our one real opening of the game. But
in that first half, if we'd have had a player like Asante or Maja in our
We'd have won. If you just swapped the centre forwards over before the game, I'm sure we'd have won the game.
We'd have been out of sight by half time, wouldn't we? And it wouldn't have mattered.
Out of sight or not. I mean, if we'd have got a goal or two in the first half, we'd have won the game.
Yeah. Because they weren't they weren't all that West Brom. Okay, they were able to bring on the likes of Mauat, Maja, and Diangana off the bench. But, you know, they got good. I mean, you look at their front three. And it's not a three because it's Asante with Wallace and Swift. I mean, Wallace and Swift would get in a bottom half Premiership club, both of those, wouldn't they? Yeah.
No, they're not that good. No. But
you'd have them in our side in place of anybody we've got at the moment, possibly.
Well, I'm not so sure about. I mean, Jed Wallace is a player I've liked for a while. I mean, mind you say you'd have him in our side. I wouldn't want to pay West Brom's wage bill. In fact, West Brom are struggling to pay West Brom's wage bill. So look, I mean, we've got the players we've got. We know that Sykes and Bell can finish. What we haven't got is players that create chances for them. But yesterday, there were chances to cross. Our crossing wasn't brilliant. There were chances for... What I'm not seeing is little clever through balls. When we played West Brom last season in the Cup, they played a very high line. Mm. And their defence, especially their central defenders, I've seen Milk turn quicker. I mean, they make Rob Dickey look like a sprinter. So we need to be putting balls between the full-backs and the centre-half. That's what we didn't do enough of yesterday. We didn't do it at all in the second half. West Brom completely dominated the game. And I'll go as far as saying if they pick the team they finish with from the start, I think we could have been in trouble. But, you know, we got at the end, we got a point out of it, which we both said we're content with. But we've got to tweak it at home slightly to make ourselves more threatening. Now,
and I just want to pick up a point you made there about West Brom's wages, which are high. But Josh Maja, right, who was at Sunderland for a bit, well, he scored at least one goal for the opening game last season for them. He's been bought in their climate of austerity. And if we'd have relaxed the purse strings a little, which obviously isn't ever going to happen under Pearson's tenure, he's somebody that would have answered and been affordable for having that big man up front. So, you know, West Brom, what do they pay for Maja? And are they paying him?
Nothing.
It was a free.
As far as I'm aware, he was a free transfer signing, but there are free transfer signings and free transfer signings. It depends what he's earning a week. I would guess he's gone to West Brom on a wage that would bust our wage structure. Yeah. And there's your problem. Listening to Tinian yesterday, he did an interview and they screened part of it on Robin's TV. And Brian said, we missed out on a couple we went for that we really wanted. But luckily enough, we were able to get some others that were right at the top of our list. So it'd be interesting to know who the two players they would. We know one was Joe Bryan.
I personally wouldn't want him back here for the same reason that, you know, again, we'll talk about that in a minute. Callas said, I want to be in Bristol, you know, I'll come back wherever I go and all this. We don't want this to be a rest home for bloody ex-players.
It's not a question of a rest home. It's a question of affordability. Now, our wages, when our accounts finally come out, the next set of accounts, you'll probably see a reduced wage bill. You won't see the vastly reduced wage bill until the next set of accounts, because in this set of accounts, we were still paying Callas, Jay De Silva, Casey Palmer for a bit. So I could understand the Callas situation from both sides. I can understand Callas saying, why should I take? He was offered about 40%. Of what he was on, and he was made an offer. The contract was put on the table, and he confirmed there were no further negotiations. So basically, City made him a take it or leave it offer. He started getting worried because he admitted there were no offers. Then he said there were two or three clubs trying to sign him. I don't think he's telling porkies. I'll be very interested in keeping an eye on seeing how many games he actually starts for Schalke
4. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the thing. It's all right saying, well, I'd like to stay, but it's a calculated risk. you say, well, I'd love to see Thomas Kalas at his best in our team, and he'd walk in the team. But if he's unavailable for one injury reason or another, then you start saying, well, hang on, the money we paid him, we could go and sign possibly another two players from League One, and one of them might come good. So I've said right the way from the start of the season that I think the squad's still short because of our injury situation. And people are saying, but when we get Tommy back and when we get McCrory back,
forgotten all about him. Eamon as well. Rob Atkinson. Yeah. I mean, look, McCrory, Conway.
Well, hang on a minute, Dave. Hang on a minute. Let me finish this point. When we get them back, someone else will be injured because that's how it works. So that's why I say the squad's a little bit light, and we're definitely light up front.
I hear what you're saying, somebody else will be injured. But if you look at those three, Atkinson, McCrory, and Conway, I would say all three of those are starters. Now, the ones in, when everybody's fit, and, you say we get three more injuries. I mean, if you had to take three players that you wouldn't want to get injured out of our side at the moment, then it would probably be Naismith, James, and Knight. And we'll come on to those three when we look forward to the Plymouth game. Let's just get back into the action in the second half. I say it was all West Brom. Sykes had a header tipped over by Palmer. Furlong put in a cross, and Max was beaten because Swift's header, that would have been four goals for him so far if this season had gone in. They were making their subs, and I think I heard somebody say on Radio Bristol yesterday, we didn't make any substitutions until the 79th minute of the game. And one or two players, notably Pring in my book, they seemed to be blowing a bit. So, that was the substitutions, the game management or the substitution management. How did you rate that yesterday, Ian?
I thought that was poor. And the reason Pring was blowing a bit is because West Brom were overloaded down both sides. And because of the tactical tweaks and changes that Carlos Corberan made. And Pearson countered it too late. If you remember, he brought Roberts on to basically play in front of Cam Pring or slightly behind Cam Pring. He swapped so he put two fullbacks on that left-hand side to try and counter that and to be able to get forward. Where we lost the game, we lost control, was in the midfield. Our midfield became ineffective. We didn't win enough second balls. And where in the first half, our press and counter-press with Williams, Knight was good, and James was doing what Matty James does, because he's one of those players. He's a bit like Cole Skews. You only notice him when he's not there.
Yeah, no, I thought he was solid yesterday. He did everything.
Yeah, and the amount of rubbish he clears up is unbelievable. You don't call him Dredger because he does pull us out of it quite a bit. But he's a player that I think he's almost one we miss most when he's not there, because we haven't got anybody else apart from, well, perhaps Cal Naismith who can do that. But you mentioned, moving on to Plymouth. We do need to make ourselves more threatening at home and more of a threat over 90 minutes. I think it's true to say we haven't scored a goal in the first half this season.
Yeah, may well be.
And we need to be more of a threat and have real end product. And all of our strikers, every striker at the club is better in a two than a one. Every single one. So we need to tweak it at home. You can go away. We've proved we can score goals away. We got, two at Swansea. We got a goal at Hull. We got a goal at Millwall. I mean, we're not absolutely banging them in, but compared to our home form, we are. So I said at the start of the season, particularly with Tommy out, we need another centre forward. And Naki, I'm afraid, good player that he is, isn't it.
Not based on form. Let's wrap up on the game, Ian. We said substitutes were late. I mean, they'd already brought on three very good players. You talked a moment ago about the Cornick incident. I mean, that was one that, I think, was it a good save? Was it a bad miss? I mean, you've got your Cornick detractors that will say he's crap. That was a bad miss. And then you've got other people that take, we'd have sort of robbed the game had it been based on the second half. But and then we got lucky with Madger and Naismith late on, didn't we? Because some people thought that the Viner one was a penalty as well. And if it had gone to VAR, that was in the first half when he took Asante down. Do you think both of those decisions, and Naismith on Madger, Viner on Asante, if that had been a Premier League game, do you think they'd have consulted VAR on both?
They both would have been consulted just because incidents like that are. I don't think either would have been a penalty. Because don't forget, for it to be, they might have asked the referee to look at it again. And when they do that, referees normally bottle it and don't stand by their original decision. But Zach Viner, buddy, definitely gets the ball first.
Yeah.
All right. But you can't do a sliding tackle like that without affecting the player, because after you kick the ball, you can't disappear.
No, the player went through his legs, or he went through the player's legs.
If I slide and I'm sliding towards you, and I'm a professional footballer and I weigh, what's that weigh? Probably about 11 and a half, 12 stone, and he's 6 foot one, then I'm bound to knock you over after I hit the ball if it's a sliding tackle. Mm. Same thing with Cal Naismith. Cal Naismith was more debatable, but I think he got, well, he took everything out, man, ball. He was only had, if you watch it back, the West Brom player slightly hesitates. Now, whether he was looking for a penalty, but I think he'd have been better off going for the ball, touching it with his toe, and then Naismith's going to wipe him out and he's going to get a penalty.
Yeah.
So it's definite. So I wouldn't say that either of those were what VAR is meant to sort out.
Yeah.
Is clear and obvious errors. I wouldn't call either a clear and obvious error. So, okay. No, in
well, either. Talk about the referee, Anthony Backhouse. I thought he let the game flow. There were a couple of instances where he could have blown, and then the passage of play broke in favour of the side that had been offended against. I mean, I know you were watching it on Robin's TV from abroad, and I was at the game, and some people say, oh, you can't see the same on Robin's TV. But did you think he let the game flow quite well and refereed it quite competently? Yeah.
Considering it was his first ever championship game, yeah.
Is that right? His first ever championship?
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, what you can't see on Robin's TV that you can see better at the ground is things like team shape across the pitch. So if you have to watch carefully to see if, for example, Knight is playing in front of Williams or alongside Williams, and Matty James is a bit further in behind, you can see that better at the ground. Because if you can see it if you're looking across the pitch from the Dolman or from the Lansdowne. So that you can see. But don't forget, on Robin's TV, you get four or five different camera angles.
Yeah.
And you see replays.
It's now, a big advantage, yeah.
It is a big advantage. And, I thought we let the game flow. Did he make some mistakes? Yeah, probably they all do because they're human. But I would probably give him an 8 out of 10 for how he refereed the game. But certainly his refereeing didn't impact the game in a negative way. So he didn't give a daft penalty or send a bloke off who shouldn't have been sent off or anything like that. So, I was relaxed about the referee.
Yeah. Let's talk about some individual performances, Ian, and we'll work through the team. We've talked about some players, but I'm just going to pick one or two others. I mean, Max O'Leary, any goalkeeper's got to be happy with a clean sheet. Everything he dealt with yesterday, he handled it well. He didn't spill it. I thought he commanded his area quite well. And, there were some big blokes up there. I think his distribution is improved a bit as well. What were your thoughts on Max yesterday? He didn't have a lot to do, but what he did it. As you'd expect, yeah.
That would, if I was going to make a criticism of the game, my criticism would be that neither keeper had enough to do. Mm. You can put that down to some really good defending, and in our case, some real last ditch stuff. And I heard Naismith say after the game, you don't like going to ground in the penalty area because you're giving the referee a decision to make.
Yeah.
But it's desperation, and after you might have made a mistake or somebody plays a fantastic through ball. But when you've got clever players in the team like Mowat and Swift, who can see a pass and who can play it through, and we, as I've said previously, we lack that player, then it's a. I would say that if you'd have swapped the keepers over before the game, it wouldn't have made much difference. And no. and I haven't seen a keeper yet that I'd say, oh my God, I wish we had him instead of Max O'Leary. Max is a decent goalkeeper.
He's a championship. And he's a he could be bettered, but he's holding his place there on merit.
Well, he'll him. Don't forget, I think what's Max 26?
26.
He'll be playing in goal for another professionally barring injury in 10 years, and he'll be a better goalkeeper when he's 29 than he is now. You just
he's learning and he's not learning at our expense, you know, because I say he kept a clean sheet yesterday, so he's not done any ricks so far this season. You talked earlier about Tanner, who was in the side because Gardner-Taylor Hickman, that's a mouthful. Somebody I went to with a couple of games ago said they're targeting him and he doesn't go forward. I mean, he is unkind though it sounds, but he is probably the team in our team. If you're the opposition, you're going to say target him because he's not, you know, he's not the best, is he?
I think he's a very good defender and he's played against some very good players and they haven't done him. Best I can remember some Brereton Diaz. Didn't run him. The kid yesterday, was it Phillips? Didn't turn him inside out. Didn't run. But what he is a defender. Now, do you think he played any worse yesterday than Cam Pring? Because I don't.
No, I'd agree. And as you say,
he's a convenient scapegoat.
Yeah.
And I think TGH, if I had to analyse it, I would say TGH is, from what I've seen, the limited amount I've seen, is better on the ball in terms of he'll take free kicks and set pieces. Mm. He's a better passer of the ball forward. He is aggressive in the tackle, but I don't think, I haven't seen yet that he's as good a defender as George Tanner.
Fair enough, yeah.
So I think it depends what you want. If you're playing a back four, you're... fullbacks are basically defensive, and what you get going forward is a bonus, depending on the tactics you play and one thing or another. But if you were playing, if you're saying, well, we're going to play wing backs, then you probably stick Mark Sykes there, or you might play TGH. Then you've got the issue: where do you put Mark Sykes? So it's a quandary. It's a tactical quandary. And let's say, you know, Nigel, we know, has got to go into hospital to have a back operation. And so we'll have Curtis Fleming on the sideline. Now, I think, providing Nigel isn't completely laid up, he'll still be picking a team and he'll still be in.
I think I read somewhere that he's likely to miss Plymouth, Leicester and Stoke.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the, probably not the same injury, but a little bit like the Guardiola situation at Man City. So hopefully it all goes well, no complications or anything like that. And because you don't like to see the bloke hobbling around on crutches on the
suddenly came from nowhere, didn't it? Because I noticed him, he wasn't bouncing around on the touchline. So, if you may have read more than I have on it, that you know, is it suddenly something that cropped up in the last 48 hours that needs attention?
I don't think it is, but I just think it's probably. I mean, he was a professional footballer, centre-half, big guy. It's probably a wear. I'm guessing it's a wear and tear injury.
Wear and tear.
Let's stick with completely wrong. He might have fallen down the stairs and done it, but
you might have been chasing the otters down on Kenmore or something like that.
Yeah? you never know, mate. But
it's a bit different, isn't it? You get the wolves in the Carpathian Mountains, and on Kenmore you get bloody otters. But there we go. Let's stick with individual players. I didn't watch any of the game, but Netherlands versus Ireland. Jason Knight was named player of the match, and as somebody put on OTIV, or it might have been Twitter, and apologies for not remembering who it was, but they said on there, why don't we just negotiate a fee with Bournemouth now? Because there were non-Bristol City-related people saying, why isn't this guy playing in the Premier League? I mean, he... started the game well yesterday, but I thought he ran out of puff a little bit as well, didn't you? But we've signed a good one there, haven't we?
What, Jason Knight?
Yeah.
Yeah, we still have to find, for me, was playing a little bit deeper, more or less alongside James Williams in midfield, rather than that classic number 10 role, perhaps in the same way that Andy Vyman played 10. Mm. And let's not forget, he might be back on the bench on Tuesday night. So I like Jason Knight. I think he needs to add an end product to his game. You know, that final assist ball coming through into the box for a goal. I still don't think we get enough players in the penalty area sometimes. I mean, Cam Pring whipped in a cross yesterday and we never had a soul within 10 yards of goal.
No.
Now, you could blame the bloke who crossed it and say, well, what the hell do you cross it for? Why don't you just smash it in low or something like that? But that's a little bit of muscle memory when you're in those situations as to where you cross the ball. But a lot of that comes down to the fact that we haven't got a natural number 9 in the team. Yeah. I like him. You've got a choice for me against Plymouth is whether you rest him or Joe Williams, because we need to get another striker.
I was going to ask you about Joe Williams, Ian, because are we seeing the best of Joe Williams now? Because he looked all action yesterday. He had that shot opposite, well, you weren't at the ground, but I was in line with it, even though it was
Left
far
foot.
End of the pitch. We are seeing the player that we thought we had 3 years ago, aren't we?
Yes, without doubt. I mean, and I'm touching wood all the time I'm saying this, that a fit Joe Williams and an informed Joe Williams is a decent player. We everybody's known that. No one's ever said, oh, this bloke Williams can't play football. All they've ever said is, well, he'd be great when he actually plays. Well, he's actually playing. Mm. And he played 30-odd games last season as well. So we shouldn't knock him. Hopefully, he's over the worst of any niggles, because he had all sorts. He had groin, then he had 2 or 3 hamstrings on the spin. And I like him as a player. Now, Joe would tell you himself, he's not going to get a mountain of assists and goals, because that isn't what he is. But as a box-to-box bloke who aids the press along with Knight and the likes of Sam Bell, Naki, Mark Sykes. He'd do a job for you. But what we've got to do, which is why controversially on Tuesday night, I'd put Knighty on the bench, give him a rest, because he's had a lot of football. He played 2 full internationals against good teams. It was France and Holland, wasn't it?
Yes.
Man of the match in one of the games against France.
No, Netherlands, it was man of the match.
Oh, right. Okay. So, but I mean, that's
anyway,
two good
matter.
Teams.
He was playing.
Yeah. Now, the problem. So I would bring Yeboah, start him with Naki up front, and leave one of the midfielders out and leave the rest of the team alone apart.
Well, it's interesting, because I was going to come on to the lineup Tuesday. Mm. Max, obviously, in goal. Gardner, Taylor, Hickman comes back in. Viner, obviously. I was going to suggest sort of bringing Rob Dickey back into the back four. And since he was puffing, put Roberts at left back, and you've got Cam to come on maybe with half an hour to go, but you're not expecting him to be at full pelt. And then that middle of the park, obviously, Naismith, you're saying a middle of the park of Naismith, James and Williams then, yes? Is that right?
No, that's what you're saying.
Naismith, James and Williams, that's leaving out Knight. So it's Naismith moving into midfield in place of Knight. What are you saying in midfield then?
I'm saying you have, basically, you play a 4-2-2-2. So you play Taylor, Gardner, Hickman at right back. I'd stick with Campering, as I think Roberts is a bit unproven at Championship level as a left back. Obviously, you've got to see him play for him to prove himself. I'd stick with the 2 same centre backs, because you've just got a clean sheet. And I'd take a careful look at what Plymouth have got up front. So if they got a 6'6" bloke, then you might bring back Rob Dickey on the basis of horses for courses. Then I'd have 2 in midfield at the moment. That'd be James and Williams. And then you've got your 2 wide players in Bell and Sykes. And up front, I'd have Yeboah and Wells. So two changes basically in, okay, in personnel.
So you're leaving the key. I think that could get a little bit overrun myself.
Well, you've got a choice. You can win games 4-2, or you can go on drawing them 0-0. Because what we're doing at home at the moment is it encapsulates what Nigel Pearson's achieved at Bristol City, which is not losing games. So
was the objective, and we finally
turned defeats into draws.
Yeah.
But we're not winning any more games, and that's over a whole season.
Yeah.
The last three seasons, 15 games wins.
And it's interesting, yesterday, last season, the last two or three seasons, we'd have lost that game yesterday, and we didn't.
Well, last season, we would have probably drawn it as well. But my point is, if we're to progress, and this is a key question, and I'd really like to know, might actually put a poll on Twitter or something, I'd really like to know from City fans, would you be happy, or use the word content, if we didn't get promoted in the next five seasons, as long as we stayed in the Championship? Or would you really like to see us seriously progress? And by I mean make the playoffs.
Well, we're not going to... I mean, our owner says that we've got a better squad than Luton, therefore we should be challenging.
Yeah, but our owner, with great respect to him, football isn't especially subject to mastermind, is it?
We come on to that in a minute as well, because I think we've done the game to death. I mean, Nige did name a full nine on the bench yesterday.
Yeah.
Interesting, I heard him speak pre-match, and he said the under-21s and obviously Knight LaBelle and Arroyo had been left out because the under-21s hadn't done so well, but Knight LaBelle got the nod to get into the squad. But, you know, this lad, Nelson, I'd never heard of him before. Brian Tinian tweeted, very fast, pacey winger. Do you think he'd have got 5 minutes if we'd have been winning 3-0? Or had you heard of him before, Ian? Because I certainly hadn't.
Well, he played last week for the under-21s, but they were saying yesterday he was 17. According to the internet, he's 19, but that's by the by. He's strong and he's very quick, but he can play defensive midfield, right centre back or right full back. So handy guy to have on the bench. And he impressed for the under-21s last week. But he's another one. I loved Yeboah when he came on, especially when that big centre-half got hold of him.
Yeah.
And he put the old judo throw on him. Yeah. I mean, he made that bloke bump over.
Yeah.
And then ran off with the ball, the referee. Then,
hang on, he's got this almost Maradona-esque upper body strength, hasn't he?
Well, he's a big, strong kid. I mean, he's 17.
Yeah.
What's he going to be like when he's 20, for God's sake?
Well, that's that's another £25 million player off the conveyor belt. Well, we're still nine.
Well, let's hope we see him play for us and score some goals for us rather than sell it. Start him Tuesday night. Look, if he's blowing out a you-know-where after 45, 50 minutes, fine.
Well, you've got five substitutes you can make here, and you can substitute a substitute these days, can't you?
Exactly right. And if, look, listen, you go get 3-0 up, you can get some kid out the Section 82 and play him.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I would say there's two things. It utilises a squad. It rests key players.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to...
It's got to be one hell of a game next Saturday up at Leicester, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it is. I mean, fantastic response to the ticket sales. I mean, our support is, I've got to say, is amazing.
Yeah. Well, 5,000 pay on the day yesterday, which is pretty damn good, I think, really.
Yeah.
3,000 people go, 3,500 people nearly going up to Leicester, 2,500 Swansea. And
oh, it's over 3,000 for Leicester, isn't it?
Yeah, tickets sold out. 3,300, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, tickets sold out in about a day and a half.
Yeah.
So
we're getting the support. I mean, you know, the fans, I think the spirit in the club is good. I think the players are with Pearson. And I feel personally a little bit, and we'll come on to that as the final point. I think personally at the moment, it's the fans, the players, and Pearson against the authorities, yeah? And you want them to do well, yeah? You want the players and Nigel to do well in spite of the lack of support that he's getting from up above. But let's pick up on a couple of other topics that came up this week. At last, the away kit came out. Was it worth the wait, Ian? Have you found your attempt to purchase blocked because they've sold out already, apparently, but all black?
Well, I like it. My only question has been, and no one's really answered it yet, why has it taken so long? Because I was expecting us to come out with this kit that was, I don't know, orange and yellow and purple, some kind of psychedelic color and luminous or something, you know, something really unusual. But basically, it's a plain black kit with a bit of piping on it. Now, I think
and
it's a
image
nice
of the 1974-75 season program logo on there.
Wonderful, right? But why did it take? Well, the last kit, the third kit, came out last season, because I remember seeing us wear it, amongst other places.
Yeah.
So it been 6-8 months to get that out? I just wonder why it's taken so long.
Maybe, and it was such an aberration, the away kit, that, you know, maybe Phil Alexander has exerted influence in that area and said, you can't wear that. And, you know, they've gone back to basics.
Well, to be honest, there were two complaints from City fans, primarily. One was quality, and particularly around anything with that ridiculous bird on it. Because I've seen plenty of robins in my life, and they look nothing like that in flight. But the other thing, well, that was quality, and then people were moaning about the robin and saying it looks chabby and it looks cheap and whatever. I think it's a good kit. I mean, but for example, we're playing Leicester next week. I'm guessing we'll either wear the third kit or we'll wear our red and white, because you don't want one team in all black and another team in blue, do you? It's a bit clashy.
No.
So that's just a guess, man. It's up to the referee, isn't it? The referee could look
around.
You're not wearing that, mate.
Yeah, we could wear it away at Rotherham on Sky, the all black on Sky.
Yeah, well, you could wear all red. You know, you don't have to change all your kit. You could say, well,
all white versus all black. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's out. It's out. Nice bit of purple and green piping on there. Next thing I want to come on to is Project. Was it White Beam? Yeah, now I'm a big conspiracy theorist. Look this up if you're still listening. Project Bluebeam, but let's just move on from there. We won an eco award. We're the most eco-friendly. What do you know about it, Ian? And this Project White Beam, you know,
we're the most eco-friendly team in the Championship. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
I must admit, I don't know a great deal about it. I mean, it's always nice to see your club win an award for anything. And I think, you know, from an eco point of view, we've all got to move that way. It's no point, you know, denying climate change or anything like that. And every little everyone does help. So
Ian, you won't be flying over to Madeira then, yeah, as part of your bit, or eating meat because cows fart and they're the biggest producers of methane in the whole world, yeah?
So. Well, primarily, I've been eating a lot of, you'd be glad to know, I've been eating a lot of fish, particularly shellfish over here, Dave, because we're only 900 miles from Morocco, so you can get prawns that are bigger than your arm. and lobster. So, no, look, there are certain things. What I won't be doing is taking a private jet anywhere.
Yeah. No, I know. No, we've done it a few times, Ian, haven't we? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
We're currently talking to a private jet company about being sponsors for FBC podcast as well, actually. Yeah. So.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, if they can.
I knocked on their door, but I haven't had a reply back yet.
I can't think why. Yeah. I mean, whether anyone it's not a matter of what you like or what you don't like. There are certain things that we need to do. We can't go on, you know, I don't want to get political, but we can't go on pumping raw sewage in the sea and in rivers, because anyone would tell you they don't do it over here. No. So, you know, and if you've got a problem with cleaning water up, well, build some desalination plants then and do things like that, like they do in other countries. But we need to get much better at that.
I have to say, you know, yeah, we do need to get much better in a lot of things.
I see the Environment Secretary, Theresa Coffey, some guys come up with a nickname for her on Twitter, Nelly the Effluent,
yeah.
Back to football.
Final topic. Supporters Club and Trust had a meeting with the club, but the communications officer, great performance he put in as senior Reds about 4 months ago. But
riveting.
Will you be at senior Reds this coming Thursday, Ian? Yes? Are you back in the country or no?
No.
No, you won't. I'll be there. Anyway, Supporters Club and Trust. It transpires that all the food prices and everything is set by the support, by the Bristol Sport. Ergo, everything that is on match day revenue in the concourse and everything like that is going to the coffers of Bristol Sport. Is that right?
As I haven't read that information in the same place as you look at it, but that is, I will say, that's my understanding. Perfectly happy from somebody from the club to come out and correct me.
Yeah. But isn't that then a case that if there's this separation, because you said to me, even with the senior Reds, we have to pay to hire the room from Bristol Sport. So Bristol Sport is this all-embracing. But we've become a tenant in a ground that we once owned in its entirety as Bristol City Football Club, haven't we?
Well, that's what happens when you get in debt and you have to sell your house.
Yeah.
So, it, you know,
but isn't all of this, because things sort of start to come out the woodwork, it's not conspiracy or anything like that, it is what it is, yeah? But isn't this sort of setting it up for if somebody wants to buy the football club as opposed to the whole Bristol Sport thing, lock, stock and barrel, that you could have the football club and rent the ground on match days, which technically we're doing at the moment, and just have the income from ticket sales and TV. Yeah.
Well, that would depend.
Makes it easier if there's all this cross charging with this multiplicity of companies. I mean, it's so layered that it's, you know, it's getting ridiculous.
Well, yeah, but I mean, at one point we owned the ground, but at the point we owned the ground, we also went bankrupt in 1982.
Yeah.
So let's not say that, oh, well, that's a panacea if you own your own ground. It certainly isn't. Steve Lansdowne said to me a long time ago, and I can remember the conversation we had. It was in the director's box up at York, and we were playing an FA Cup game. I remember the game because Gary Johnson decided to play Cole Skuse left wing. But he said to me, really, the last thing you need as a football club is a ground, because you only use it a couple of times a month. And the rest of the time, it's a bit of a burden. But we know that you've got fantastic conferencing facilities at Ashton Gate. You've got lots of offices, private rooms. They've got the coffee shop, the shop. They've got the pub, the pizza place where you can eat. And so there's lots of revenue streams down there. But as I understand it, that is Bristol Sport, and that's run by, well, that part of it, Ashton Gate, the building is run by Mark Kelly as the MD.
Yeah.
So they would get the revenue for things like pop concerts and things like that. And they put on that. Somebody was telling me that the supporters club, there's 11 supporters club coaches leaving to go to Leicester, and they're not allowed to park. No one's allowed to park at the ground because there's a function.
Nobody can park their cars at the ground, yeah? So the coaches...
Well, I don't know whether it's part of your... Well, the coaches won't be pulling away from the car park like they always did.
Because they won't be able to drop them off back there anyway, because there's all got to be cars in there, yeah? So...
I don't know what's going on down there. I don't even... I mean, but that's what somebody who I trust for giving me information has said. Now...
Yeah.
once again, perfectly happy if anything we say is incorrect, this is all to the best of our knowledge. The club can come out and correct it. But you've got those tiers of management. So you've got Pula Sport that owns Bristol Sport, and Steve, the Lansdowne family own Pula Sport. They're based in Guernsey. And I think most fans go into the game. Are they bothered about where their ticket money goes?
Every fan that's going to the game is going to be looking at the top of the Championship as we sit here. It's early days, right? Six games on. And they're going to be looking. And we're sat quite nicely in 10th. Can't argue with that. Mm-hmm. But they're going to be looking as well at, like, Preston. You know, like us, never had Premier League football. Leicester, you'd expect them to be right up there. Ipswich, you know, come straight up. That's the Championship bounce, but got a win at Sheffield yesterday. Norwich are going to be there. But then you look at Hull, Birmingham, Sunderland. Yeah, they're all clubs, well, particularly Hull and Birmingham, that have had their problems. It's still too early to make any assumptions, isn't it, Ian? And I guess, as we said a while ago, the six games in the run-up to the next international break, you know, it's one down with five to go. Come the 14th of October, or come Saturday the 7th of October, when there'll be 11 games on the board, of which Nigel's not going to be involved in the next three because of his illness, you know, that's going to be the time to sort of say we are where we are, sort of thing. Yes, would you agree with that view?
I like the idea of looking at it in blocks of 10, because in league games, so you've played five home and five away normally-ish. Yeah. Then look at it at Christmas after 23 games. Now, obviously, if you play 10 games and you haven't got a point on the board, something needs to happen. But I wouldn't be panicking at the moment. I think I'm right in saying that normally, for the past few years, we've started seasons reasonably well. Although I don't know if it was last season or season before, we went a lot of games before we won our first home game. I've said what I think we need some tweaks at home so we score more goals. Now, that might mean winning 3-2, 4-2 instead of trying to win 1-0, which we may be doing at the moment. I'm not saying we're trying to win games 1-0. We want to score as many goals as we can. But however you look at it, we scored one goal at home in 360 minutes plus a football, 400 minutes. So something there, normally you'd look at that and think that needs to change, because I don't think West Brom had picked up a point away from home before yesterday.
No.
So that needs to change. So it's down to the coaches that we've got. It's a little bit like when people keep saying, side sitting and it's a low block. And West Brom weren't in a low block second half yesterday. And
no, they took the game to us. They did. They took the game to us.
Couldn't get the ball off them. So we need, strangely enough, we created our best chance of the game with about 3 minutes to go, the Cornick one.
Yeah.
And to pick up a few comments that people who are listening have said, Cornick can finish, just not showing it for us yet. But he needs to. He is a forward. He's there to create and score goals. The work rate thing and the long throw, they're nice to haves. But if you know, we've had some right, you can have a lazy so-and-so. If he can get 30 goals a season, he'll be in the side for me. And in answer to Liam's question from a while ago about breakfast fare,
I just seen those chats.
I don't eat, I don't ever have a breakfast wrap. I've never had one in my life, never will. But if I'm having a cooked breakfast, it's tomato sauce. If I'm having a bacon sandwich or a sausage sandwich in white bread, it's brown sauce.
I'm not a brown sauce person at all. But I tell you what, I had yesterday, as part of my weight loss regime, I've got to lose 2 pounds a week for the next 10 weeks. That's my goal. Because
that's 24. That's 24 quid, Dave.
No, not
that's
quite.
A lot of money.
But I did have yesterday from put together by the lovely Melanie, I did have a sandwich which was grilled halloumi and tomato and chili jam in there, and that's good.
Well,
that's
does two things, Dave. That absolutely underlines the fact you're upper middle class.
Of course, right? Yes.
So you wouldn't have that. I mean, if I don't know. If you lived in a council house somewhere, you wouldn't be having that sandwich, would you? And I've never had a sandwich like that in my life, I'm proud to say.
Well, we've got I've got kedgeree when I go home after recording.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you want to get an injection for that, mate, because that can turn nasty if you don't have it cleared up with antibiotics. So
I say we've sort of gone way off track there. What's on your agenda today then, Ian? Sitting out in the sun, yeah?
Yeah. Sun, pool, possibly a walk, out for a meal later on. They actually, Madeira's a quiet island, but they actually have this annual event, a thing called the Naval Club. And
that sounds very colonial. You go into the Naval Club here. Or was that people sit there and gaze at their belly buttons?
No, what happens is that they have this event, and it used to start at 10 at night and go on until 5 in the morning. And the local hotels, the window, if it's so loud, the windows would be rattling in your hotel room.
God.
So it now starts at 6 and finishes at 1 in the morning. At 1 in the morning, I think the local mayor pulls the plug. So you can't go on any longer because they've had that many complaints and threats of violence that they've had to do something about it. But no, I should be relaxing. And then I don't know what the next home game I'll see is, but I'll...
Probably Stoke on the 30th.
Of September.
This month, yeah.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly that one.
There you go. So, well, look, we will be back with our Plymouth recording at probably 9 o'clock on Wednesday morning, reviewing that game, which we're looking forward to. Big contingent coming up from the southwest. Let's hope that they've shot their bolt in trying to beat the surprise leaders of the Championship. And then the Leicester game next week, we're going to record that 9 o'clock on the Sunday morning as well, which is slightly different, but then that suit fits
probably 10, Dave, I think.
Probably 10. There we go.
Yeah, because of commitments, if you don't mind. I don't know.
Thanks a lot for listening. We're, as I say, every episode this season has had over 1,000 views. I was looking at the Norwich game, and it was ticking on at about 996. So even after 3 weeks or 2.5 weeks of that, people still listen. Thank you. But don't expect people to listen to old stuff. But that's really good.
Well, it's nice that, to be honest, Dave, I mean, we only started this for something to do during lockdown, if we tell the truth.
Yeah.
We weren't going for world domination or anything like that. But it's really nice that people are listening and people do say, yeah, listened, enjoyed it. Oh, I didn't agree with that, which is great.
That's what it's all meant to be. The views are our own.
Opinions, isn't it?
Yeah, we can say, because we have no affiliation with the club at all, we have no affiliation with the club at all, you know, we can say what we like. And we don't say we're right, it's just our opinions. And I hold my hand up and say I'm underinformed in some places. I'm not the tactical genius that somebody like Dave Fevs is. I welcome when we have Chris Honor and Gary Hours on with their technical input. And as I say, Ian, as always, has been here from the start. Yeah, so we do it because it's a good crowd. But everybody, thank you for listening. All the best.
What if I've been unlucky? God bless all. Bye-bye.
Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red, red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robins are bobbing along. When the red, red robin comes bobbing along. along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bob, bobbing along.